The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. And despite the international break already being in full swing here at FSD, we are still here every single day bringing you the hottest takes from the biggest stories right the way across the Premier League. And with the majority of the Premier League jetting off for the final international window of 2021, we take a look at some of the latest updates and breaking stories from the last 24 hours. Right then, so let's get started. And in part one, we're going to dive into the Premier League's latest fan own goal, as reports from the Daily Mail this morning claim the Premier League has blocked plans for clubs to organise a Boxing Day charity fundraiser. And as you'd imagine, fan reaction to the decision from the Premier League has met with an angry reaction. We're going to be discussing that, getting some of the latest takes on that and what we think the Premier League should or could do as a response to their original decision. And then in part two, we get our focus on Manchester United as one of the biggest mouths in football. Yes, Mr. Rent-A-Gob himself, Neil Warnock, has revealed, shock horror United fans, he's revealed that he doesn't rate Sir Alex Ferguson. Yep. You've heard it right. Neil Warnock does not rate Sir Alex Ferguson. We're going to be getting the details on that, so don't panic. But yeah, he's essentially said that he's not a fan. And alongside Ferguson and Warnock's lack of favour for the Scots, we also talk about Paul Pogba. Breaking news on him this morning that an injury could rule him out for the rest of 2021. Right then, so plenty to get through. My name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me this morning, we have Marley Anderson. Marley, how are you doing?
Morning, guys. Yeah, I'm not too bad. Glad to see Eddie Howe getting his hands dirty on the training ground yesterday. So full of positivity.
Wonderful stuff. And Eddie Howe gets up early, and we here on Football Social Daily, we're up early, and someone who's always up early, very early, pretty much every day of the week, Wednesday regular, Matt Pidd. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good, fellas. I'm good. I feel like Carl Darlow looked in that picture that I seen this morning, Marley. I absolutely knackered. Looks like he's getting his hands dirty there, nice and early there, Eddie Howe.
I'm knackered as well. I don't know what it is. I think it's the dark night or something. I'm proper tired.
Yeah, that's it.
Don't know what it is.
It's Eddie Howe. It's the Eddie Howe influence. He makes everybody look tired because he's so energetic, and he's so energetic at 5 o'clock in the morning that it just makes you look bad and it makes you feel bad. But, you know, let's leave him to it. Eddie Howe, obviously, as Marley mentioned, we discussed in depth yesterday. He's now been installed at Newcastle. He's had his first training session and things are already looking good. But something that's not looking good, Marley, has been overnight this story in relation to the Premier League and this decision to block a gesture from Premier League clubs surrounding homeless charity shelter and Boxing Day. So essentially, Premier League clubs have contacted the Premier League to say that on Boxing Day, they want to wear their away kits. The home kits would then be signed, will be sent off to a charity auction. All of the money raised would go to shelter. All of the money raised from some match day revenue that they would also give away would be given to shelter. Positive gesture, a donation to a very, very worthy cause in and around Christmas when kind of you would like to think that, you know, positivity, helping each other out is in full swing. The Premier League have said no. They said it contravenes sponsorship rules, it contravenes kit rules, and they've essentially blocked it. This is a really, really bad look for the Premier League.
Yeah, it is. It seems like an easy win, doesn't it? You know, why don't we all wear our away kits, which you're already producing? It's not like there's a greater sort of carbon footprint on producing these kits that you're going to wear once and then essentially like get rid of and never wear again. So it seems like a bit of an easy win. And then you've gone to the Premier League and they've just gone, nope. And then they've made up some sort of... They probably haven't made up a rule, but it is strange to see them hide behind like regulations and say stuff about sponsorship and what have you, because as far as I can remember, there's a minimum amount of times that Premier League clubs have to wear their away kits and change kits anyway in the Premier League. So why not just have that as one of the games where it counts towards that thing? If you've got to wear your away kit 8 times in a season, why not just have this Boxing Day thing as the away kit thing? And have it count towards that tally. And I feel like they've all gone, oh, it's because, you know, you can't have away kits being worn at home. But there's been many times in Premier League history where teams have had to wear like made up kits almost to get away with things. I remember Sheffield United a couple of years ago when they were in the Premier League came to Newcastle and had to have a white kit manufactured because their home kit was red and white stripes. It clashed with Newcastle's black and white. And their away kit, I think, was black. And that was too much of a clash as well. So they had to come up with something brand new on the week of the game. And if you go back further than that, I mean, there was once, I think it was 2011 or 2012. It was 2008, actually. Newcastle played Hull at home. And Hull brought black shorts with them. And Newcastle wore black shorts, so that was a clash. And the rules had to be changed on the fly, on the day, and Hull ended up wearing Newcastle's away shorts and beating them 2-1 at St James's Park. So we actually got beat at home by a team wearing our own kit.
the Newcastle.
Yeah.
That's a new low, even for Newcastle. That's
oh,
a new
man,
low,
it's one of them. Do you know when people talk about your club being a banter club? Like, that was the epitome of it when Marlon King scored twice in a 2-1 win for Hull. But it's that, the point, you know, relating to that is that these things can be changed on the fly or whether it's planned. These things can be changed, so sponsorship and everything can go out the window if you want it to. And the Premier League has turned around this time and just went, nah, no, don't fancy this. And it is, as you say, a bit of a bad look for them.
Matt, as Marley says, this is an easy win for the Premier League. This was only for one match day, the 26th and the 27th of December. It would have made no real difference in terms of Premier League revenue streams. And as Marley said, logistics reasons, we've seen kits changed, we've seen anniversaries. Remember the Manchester Derby a few years back where they played in those sponsor-free kits? We have seen flexibility. We have seen changes. But ultimately, the argument from this kind of comes from a cynical point of view of there's no financial benefit for the Premier League.
Yeah, and that's what it ultimately boils down to. I mean, Christmas is meant to be the time for goodwill and, you know, peace on earth and stuff like that. And you'd think the Premier League could just absolutely just hold their hands up and go, look, OK, it's for a good cause. It's not going to impact anything like substantially, so why can't we just do it? It all boils down to the fact that the Premier League don't stand to gain anything from it other than maybe a positive image. But I can't understand why they wouldn't want to do that. We all know football governing bodies are all motivated by money. That's ultimately what they want to do. They want to just create as much revenue and money as possible. We've seen it with ticket prices. We've seen it with TV rights deals. So I really just don't understand it. I mean, from a City fan's perspective, a couple of years ago, we did a thing called Tackle for Manchester, where Andy Burnham, Mayor of Manchester, and Vincent Kompany joined together to create this charity, where they did this testimonial, and the revenues raised from his testimonial went to the charity, and then they did a gala dinner after that that raised more money for the charity. So I just can't understand, because we all know homelessness isn't just a citywide problem, it's a nationwide problem, and it's becoming more and more prevalent because people have got less and less money nowadays, and things are costing more and more and more. We've seen the positive impact that football can have away from just sport in general. We've seen it with the Black Lives Matter movement. We've seen it with, you know, trying to tackle racism. We've seen it with trying to tackle homophobia. So why can't we just use it to tackle this very, 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 very big problem we have got in this country? Like I said, not just in the city, in the country in general. I'm pretty sure that the clubs involved in this, the 20 Premier League clubs, can and will discuss it together. And maybe, you know, maybe risk getting the fine from the Premier League. I'm sure Newcastle could just, you know, pay everyone's fine now. You know, they've got loads of money. they could just pay everyone's fine. It would be City at one point, but we're no longer the richest club, are we? So I think it should be down to Newcastle if that's the case.
Just like, this one's on us, lads. We've got this.
Yeah, we've got this one, boys.
It'd be the perfect thing to do as well for Newcastle's new owners. It's like being in the pub on Christmas Eve. Listen, the new guy in work, I'll get this round, don't worry. I mean, obviously, Matt, come on, Manchester City can't be crying poverty.
No, not at all.
If they have to be the ones, if Newcastle forget their wallet, Man City, you're going to step up, no?
We'll see. Well, we've seen Man City's owners for what they've actually done in the general east part of Manchester. Like, I don't know if you've drove past it on a few occasions. Like, they've built the new training facilities. They're building the new co-op arena next door to the Etihad. They've helped create jobs. You know, they've made the area look less and less, you know, run down. So I think that City's owners should be applauding on what they've done with stuff like that. And they have actually helped with the tackle for Manchester thing with Kompany and Andy Burnham. Look, I mean, it was just a joke that about Newcastle, but I think the 20 Premier League clubs, if it does come to it, should just join together and look, have a little bit of solidarity and go, no, this is something that we believe in. This is something that we actually want to help contribute towards. And if it comes to it, then we'll all join together and we'll all put our hand in our pocket and we'll take the fine.
Marty, the clubs are kind of finding themselves as the good guys in this, in the right side of the argument. They proposed this and been turned down by the Premier League. But on the back of the European Super League, where it was kind of flipped, where the clubs were looking to push for this move that fans were so unbelievably against, they were absolutely adamant that there was no way the Premier League clubs would break away and join the European Super League. The Premier League, definitely for selfish reasons on their side, didn't want to see a European Super League. But if you're looking at this, and we're all looking at this as fans of Premier League football, this is still just another example of greed. The European Super League was a massive example of greed from a select amount of clubs. This time round, it's greed from the Premier League. If you're looking at this as just an average match-going fan or someone that watches games on TV or however you watch football in the Premier League, this is just another demonstration that anybody, whether that's a club, whether that's the league, that's in a position of financial power, just isn't interested in anything other than making more money.
Yeah, and it's not a surprise, really, unfortunately, because, you know, when rich people are rich and rich organisations are rich, they don't take the foot off the gas. They want to get richer and richer and richer and make it more exclusive and all the rest of it. And, you know, you must have this amount of money to play our game. And you see that sort of in the last 10 years and beyond 20, maybe 30 years. You know, it's all been, everything's about money. The world's about money, but football in particular is bad for it. You know, they're not interested in things that will look good but not benefit them financially. And that's ultimately what this comes down to, because, you know, some of it might not be the Premier League per se, like just the Premier League. Some of it might be to protect sponsors. And there probably is a bit of truth in that. But also, if you held talks with sponsors and said, you know, the shelter have came up with this idea to wear away kits, do you want to do it? I feel like the sponsors would know that it's bad PR if they don't do it and good PR if they do, so they would have their eyes open to this whole situation of saying, you know what, let's do this because it's an easy win. It makes our company look good and it makes our sponsorship deal with the Premier League, it doesn't affect that negatively at all. So that's what we kind of could have seen, but I feel like they haven't done that and they've just gone, no, we'll hide behind some red tape and some sort of litigation and we'll deny this, but we'll see it in the next week or so. We'll fan power and we'll public outcry of why not do this very simple thing to make us look good and raise awareness of a real issue in the UK, like Matt says. You know, can we overturn this like we overturned the Super League and other things in the past as well?
There's a counter story, Matt, that's emerged that if the Premier League kind of dig in and refuse to change their mind on this, that for the 26th and the 27th of December, each Premier League club, instead of wearing their away kit, will wear the away kit of the team that they're playing against. I'm just looking at some of the games. We've got
Where's
some
that come
games
from?
Wow. Boxing Day. That's come out from the Daily Mirror, that they think the clubs are just going to essentially go completely in the opposite direction. So Manchester City are home to Leicester on Boxing Day. Newcastle are home to United on the 27th. Would you be happy, just as an absolute two fingers to the Premier League, would you be happy to see Man City going out in Leicester's slate grey?
It's a good job. It wasn't a Manchester derby at the week at that day, wasn't it?
Oh, that's the
that's one get out.
that would be the only time that I wouldn't approve it. But no. In the words of Kevin Keegan, I'd love it to see that. You know what I mean? I'd love it. It would be the ultimate two fingers, because they've gone from just simply wearing their own away kit to actually going the opposite direction and just wearing the club that they're playing against the away kit. Yeah, it would be absolutely bonkers. And to be honest, I really can't see that happening. I really can't see the clubs actually getting getting together in the changing room, going, yeah, lads, let's swap shirts now before the game, and you wear this and we'll wear that. But yeah, it would be in an ideal world if the Premier League don't actually, you know, sit down, and because we, like Marley said, there's still more room for discussion. It's by no means over yet. Obviously, there is going to be, like we've seen with the Super League situation, there will be probably some sort of protest down the line. There'll be a bit of fan power and club power involved. So let's just hope now over the next week or so, the Premier League can see a little bit of sense and come to some sort of agreement with the clubs, because I'm sure there's a way that the Premier League can benefit from this, obviously from a positive PR stance, but you know, there's got to be something else that they can, you know, gain from it. They've got to be able to gain something, like we were saying. That's the only way the Premier League are going to jump on board with it. Surely there's got to be some sort of compromise we can come to.
You say there's no Manchester derby on Boxing Day, Marley, but Liverpool do play Leeds at Anfield. That'd be a sight to behold, seeing Jesus. Jordan Henderson running around in a Leeds shirt and Calvin Phillips pulling on a Liverpool top. But Newcastle, would say, obviously, they're playing Man United on the 27th. If you're back home for Christmas, could you see yourself sitting there, Callum Wilson, pulling on a Manchester United shirt?
Jesus Christ, absolutely not. No, of this whole thing, the one thing I'm sure about that will never happen is whatever the Mirror have just conjured up there to fill a few column inches of this. And I know, lads, why don't we tell everyone that they're thinking about swapping shirts before the game? What an absolutely bizarre thing to even dream up. Having said that, if that happens now, I'm quitting. I might as well just stop what I'm doing. But honestly, if that happens, that is the end of football, I think. But yeah, we had a good run.
Game's gone.
We did.
The game has gone.
We enjoyed it for a bit of a time. Marley, obviously, we're kind of joking about this, and it is a bit tongue-in-cheek, because we do expect, obviously, people to just get together, thrash this out, and come to some sort of a compromise. Do you see this getting resolved? Like, we all hope that something gets reached in terms of a settlement. We all hope that it goes ahead and that the donation is made to shelter and people actually move on with this and make a positive gesture. But the Premier League do have a bit of a history of being the pantomime bad guy and just kind of digging their heels in, flashing their cash and saying, no, this is the rules, this is how we're doing it. Do you think this gets resolved in a positive way between now and Boxing Day?
I think there's a compromise to be had. I don't see too much of a difference between wearing a different kit and then auctioning it off, or getting something like a patch on the sleeve or on the back of the shirt, or something that promotes the homeless charity in question, and then auctioning that off as well, because ultimately it's still going to go for a lot of money and it's still going to benefit the charity. So we've seen it with the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, everybody had Black Lives Matter on the back of the shirt, plus their squad number. Why can't something similar be done for shelter and the homeless charities in question? So I feel like there's a lot of middle ground.
The NHS one as well, weren't they, Marley? They had the NHS one as well, didn't they? Protect the NHS, yeah, on the shirts as well. So that was another thing.
Exactly, yeah. There's a lot of middle ground to be had here, to be found. Whether it's away kits or a patch or a special ball or whatever it might be, there's a negotiation to be had and some sort of agreement to be come to. So we'll see if it happens.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I think, as you both said, we look at this situation, there is so much money sloshing around in the game that there's no real reason why this can't be sorted out. So fingers crossed that the Premier League and the Premier League clubs come to some sort of a compromise and this gets solved, because nobody wants to see Callum Wilson in a Manchester United shirt. Do they, Marley?
Not least of all me.
No, definitely not indeed. But, you know, in January, when Mbappe comes to St James's, Callum Wilson might be squeezed out, so you never know. You never know what might happen. Right, we are going to take a quick break here on the Football Social Daily. After the break, we're focusing on Manchester United. Neil Warnock, as you mentioned in the intro, has had a bit of a pop at Sir Alex Ferguson. Apparently, Neil Warnock, who's managed, I'd say, in and around 55,000 Premier League teams, it seems, is not a fan of Sir Alex Ferguson. He's placed him fourth on his list of all-time Premier League managers. We're going to be chatting about that, and we're also going to be discussing Paul Pogba after the news that he has probably played his last game of 2021.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Just a reminder, if you're a fan of the podcast, if you click subscribe, you can get a brand new episode every single day. We are here every day as the only daily Premier League podcast. Right, so before the break, we talked about the mean and miserly Premier League looking to block a charitable gesture for Boxing Day, and we all kind of agreed that we hope and pray and think that it is all going to get resolved. Right, so now we're going to focus a bit more kind of on matters on the pitch. Matt, I'm going to go to you first on this, because as a Manchester City fan, I reckon you're licking your lips about this story. Neil Warnock, yes, Neil Warnock, Mr. Angry, Mr. Sheffield United, has come out with a bit of a wild statement. He did an interview over the weekend where he was asked to name the best manager in the history of the Premier League, and he rattled through a few names, but the big standout quote from what he said was, Sir Alex Ferguson was fourth on his list. Now, I don't need to remind you, Sir Alex Ferguson is the most successful manager in the history of the Premier League. 13 Premier League titles, 2 Champions Leagues. He's changed the face of Premier League football. He, for me, is the dominant force within Premier League football. But Neil Warnock has said that Arsene Wenger, Jurgen Klopp and your boy Pep Guardiola have made more of a difference to Premier League football. United fans are obviously apoplectic about this. Does he have a slight point, or is he just on the wind-up?
God, I think he's just turning into a parody of himself, Neil Warnock. You forgot about Mr. Just Been Sacked from Middlesbrough as well, which is probably, yeah, probably his like 5,000th club. You know, I'm sure Warnock just wants to be in the news. I'm sure he just wants to get people talking about him again because he's just been sacked. Look, there's a point there that he's trying to make that it's non-existent. Look, I think the way the football's gone now. Football is evolving constantly. The game is always going to evolve. When you look at it from the 70s to the 80s to the 90s to the noughties, it's always evolved. It's always changed. The game now is a lot more rapid. There's a lot more emphasis on dietary stuff like that, fitness of the players compared to what maybe 20 years ago. Wenger, when he came into Arsenal, they said there was a culture at Arsenal where you had like Tony Adams and Keown and players like that that was on the booze constantly, not eating very well. He came in and he changed all that, and he turned Arsenal from this club that was always like nearly men to being this club that was challenging Man United constantly on a yearly basis for Premier Leagues, and ultimately went and won the Premier League away from them and went and completed one of the most unbelievable seasons, well, probably the most unbelievable season, even though Man City did the Centurions. I think being unbeaten for a whole Premier League season is probably the biggest achievement up there. Even though they drew 12 games, they still went a whole season unbeaten. That's Wenger's achievement right there. Guardiola's came in, he's sort of changed the way English football, the philosophy of English football. Now you look at clubs up and down the pyramid wanting to play out from the back. They want to play this style of football. Now you see managers reading Pep Guardiola's books on how to change the way they play football. You see managers wanting to pick his brains after each game. That's testament to Guardiola himself as a coach. Klopp, in his own right, is modelled his heavy metal style of football. Some clubs want to go down that route. He's done things with Dortmund in the Bundesliga. He wrestled the Bundesliga away from them for 2 seasons straight. He's won German Cups there. He's been fantastic for Liverpool. Came in, won them their first ever, you know, Premier League title. Won a Champions League there. But Alex Ferguson, he did it for 25 years plus. Came in, won the first ever Premier League, didn't he? So he comes in and he makes history there straight away. He did it consistently. He did it. People talk about formations and stuff like that. Ferguson's style of football wasn't very glamorous. We can all say that. But he got the best out of some really, really, really average players. And that's testament to him as a man manager. And he did it season after season after season. There'll never be another manager like Sir Alex Ferguson. Look, I could sit here now as a Man City fan and go on the wind-up and start saying, oh, well, Warnock's got a point. But no, that would be just complete disrespect to that man, even though he made my life a living hell growing up as a City fan, because obviously United were winning everything and City were winning absolutely nothing. You can't dispute what he did for English football, and he very nearly didn't, because he very nearly got sacked. I remember the Ta-ra Fergie banner that they had up, like time's up sort of thing. And this is a thing now that clubs don't do. We've seen it with Nuno Espirito at Tottenham. He didn't get given time. No one gets given time nowadays. Arsenal, there'll never be another manager that lasts 20 years plus now. I can guarantee you that. Arsene Wenger was probably the last that's probably going to do that in the Premier League. And as you can say from being an Arsenal fan, Fergal, when Arsene Wenger got sacked, people were saying, be careful what you wish for, and you've gone through managers now, and you look to be coming out the other end of it now positively with Mikel Arteta, and it's took enough time since Wenger got sacked for that to happen. You can't underestimate what Fergie did for English football and for Man United as a club in general. Plus he won the treble. He won the FA Cup. He won the Premier League. He won the Champions League all in one season. And that's going to take a long time for that to happen ever again, obviously, because it's not happened since 1999. You know, clubs have been close, but they've just never got there, and that's testament to Fergie in general. Like I said, Fergie got the best out of some very average players. Yeah, he had some money to spend, and he did spend a few quid, and he did buy a few players there. But the players that he did have in initially, they weren't necessarily great. He bought Eric Cantona, was it for £1 million? And look what he did for Man United, yeah, for £1 million. So though Warnock's completely just, I'm sure he's just trying to get people talking about him again, just since he's been sacked from Middlesbrough. Now he's it's moronic what he's come out with there, and he should probably take a long hard look at himself in the mirror after that.
I mean, Miley, when you look at this, Matt does have a point that Warnock is known for these things. He does just shoot his mouth off. But particularly, you kind of look at Sir Alex Ferguson and you think that that's just a universal truth, that United were the dominant force, Sir Alex Ferguson was the manager, he is the best manager in the history of the Premier League. But there's something that I always go back to, which was when United played Barcelona twice in the Champions League, and Ferguson himself and all of the United players said that game was where they kind of realised the difference in levels. Barcelona were incredible, arguably the best club team ever, and Barcelona were light years ahead of what was an excellent Manchester United team that was dominating in the Premier League. And Pep Guardiola was sat on the bench for Barcelona. He was the boss then. He was the man behind that Barcelona team. So the success argument is always going to win out with Sir Alex Ferguson. But when you look at actually the best individual manager, Guardiola's not far behind.
But
is that it? Is that all you have to say?
I'm struggling where to go with this, because like we can't really answer it now. I think we could answer it when everybody's retired. But yeah, I mean, Guardiola's on course, of course, to have a similar sort of impact on a career on a club like Man City, like Fergie did with United in the 90s, in the early 2000s, and even up to 2013 when he left. So, that time will tell, basically. Our kids, our grandkids will have this argument, and they'll be like, Guardiola's the best in the world, and then we remember Ferguson winning, however many straight Premier League titles, and it'll be like, oh, shut up, Grandad, Yeah, nobody remembers that old Scottish idiot. Like, oh, it was just a...
It'll be Eddie Howe by then. Eddie Howe will be the top dog.
Yeah, it'll just be like, oh, you could play 4-4-2 out there back in that day, and you don't know what you're talking about, Grandad. And it'll never get settled like one way or another. But you can't rank three. You can't rank Klopp above Ferguson, because if you look at what Klopp's done, it's fantastic at Liverpool. It's absolutely amazing. He ended that drought of winning them the first title in 30 years. He took a pretty poor-looking team with the likes of Andriy Voronin and Milan Jovanovic and Andy Carroll and all these players, signed better ones, signed Firmino, signed Mane, signed Salah, signed Wijnaldum, Fabinho, Van Dijk, Alisson, all these players. And that's amazing, but they've won one Premier League title. And yes, they've won the Champions League, but we're talking about the best Premier League manager ever, so that doesn't always count, sort of, per se. But even if it did, Ferguson won more Champions Leagues than Klopp has. He's won more Premier Leagues than Klopp has. He kept them at the top of the game for best part of a decade, probably longer. 13 titles in total, Premier League titles in total. And Klopp's only done that once, so... Even if you can say Klopp might be a transformational manager, so was Ferguson, because Man United hadn't won a Premier League, a Division One title, in something like 20-odd years before Man United won the... Was it 26?
26 years so 20, it was.
26 years, yeah, and then Ferguson years, yeah. came in and ended that drought, just like Klopp has, except Ferguson took the team on and kept them at the top of the league for, you know, up until sort of 2002, 2003, whatever. So you're talking another 8 or 9 years on top of that. So to come out with, for Warnock to come out with this, oh, he wasn't the best, it smacks a little bit for me of jealousy, and a little bit of, you know, sort of hitting him because it's the cool thing to do and it'll get you in more papers. And I think that's, it's the paper thing, and it's the fact that it's the international break, and you've got to take those two things and put them together and gone, this is all a bit of rubbish coming out of his mouth for a few clicks, and that's what you've got to be wary of these days, I think.
Yeah, and sprinkle it probably with a kilo of salt. Before we move on to Pogba, Matt, I just want to ask you, I was speaking to a friend of mine who's a United fan over the weekend, and we were talking kind of a little bit along these lines, maybe preempting what Neil Warnock was going to say, and the whole thing of Wenger and Ferguson and the dominance that they had at the start of the 2000s and the rivalry, the Invincibles, the treble winners. And yeah, Arsene Wenger was transformational. Ray Parlour was eating deep-fried full Englishes every day, you know, throwing the plate in the fryer, drinking pints for breakfast. That all was done away with by Wenger. So Alex Ferguson at United just turned them into this absolute machine. But I look at City and Liverpool now, and I look at the standard, and I look at essentially the games of chess that they have with each other, Pep and Klopp and the players, and everybody in the squads, the managers, is so fine-tuned. The margins are so, so thin. When I think back to Arsenal and United, it was war. You had incredible players. You had Henri, Van Nistelrooy, Beckham, Scholes, Vieira. But it was war, these games. You look at City and Liverpool now, and you just see two absolute elite beasts where there's nothing between them. Do you think they've raised the bar? Like, we just assume, like we assume with Wenger and Ferguson being the dominant managers, that Arsenal and United were the dominant Premier League teams. Do you think City and Liverpool now have overtaken that in terms of the levels that they're at?
We're talking about levels. There was a couple of seasons ago, the 18-19 one. We finished with 98 points. Liverpool finished with 97 points. I don't think that'll ever happen ever again. The stand Liverpool finished with 97 points. I don't think that'll ever happen ever again. The stand the punch. I think there was one point where City was 10 points behind Liverpool at Christmas. And we won 14 games on the trot to win the Premier League that season. And the only team to beat Liverpool to win the Premier League that season. And the only team to beat Liverpool undefeated Centurions that season, because if they would have beat us that game, they would have gone the whole season unbeaten and finished with 100 points. So these are the margins that we're talking about. And that game, I think it was just after Christmas, we played them at home, we beat them 2-1. That's got to be, for me, the highest quality Premier League game I've ever watched. Don't get me wrong, growing up, with a can of Coke and a packet of Monster Munch sat in front of the telly rubbing my hands together, I can't wait for this. Do you know what I mean? And you'd see Keown and Parlour jumping on Van Nistelrooy, pushing him around. You know, you'd see the war between Ferguson and Van Nistelrooy, pushing him around. You know, you'd see the war between Ferguson. There was always respect there, but there was always that physicality. It's not something you necessarily see nowadays. You might see it in the pressers and stuff like that, but on the pitch, it's something you necessarily see nowadays. You might see it in the pressers and stuff like that, but on the pitch, it's very, very rare now. There's a lot of mutual respect between players on the pitch. We're evolving. The players are evolving, the manager's evolving, the tactics are evolving, and like you said there, Fergal, it's the very fine margins now that will win titles. There'll be the odd occasion where you'll get a surprise package in the Premier League, you'll get like a Leicester or something like that, but ultimately the teams with the best coaches and a bit of a three-arse race for me. I don't think you can count United in the title anymore. I just don't think they've got enough. I think what's happened to them so far this season, they're probably going to change Solskjaer at some point before the season ends, and they're going to go through another transitional period, which is music to my ears. And you've got Conte just coming at Spurs, probably going to turn them around at some point in the near future. They're going to be up there. But for now, you've got Tuchel at Chelsea, who we've not spoke about, who's producing good stuff over there, and you've still got Guardiola and Klopp over at Liverpool. So yeah, this season again, it's going to be fine margins, and for seasons to come, it's probably going to be the same thing. Newcastle in the future, Marley probably going to be a bit more sceptical about this than me, but Newcastle now have got a lot of money. In the next 5 years, they're going to be up there. So, yeah, football's going to be very exciting for the next few years. And like I said, it's more of an emphasis now on tactics and stuff like that rather than it was 20 years ago, more just like, you know, brute force and brute strength and that kind of physicality that get you through the league titles.
Let's look at Paul Pogba, Marley, because he's lasted one training session away on France duty. They've got two games to wrap up their World Cup qualification, Kazakhstan at home this weekend and then Finland away in midweek as they look to kind of rubber stamp their place at Qatar. But Paul Pogba will be playing no part. He's torn or at least damaged a thigh muscle. He's flying back to the UK today. Pictures posted on Instagram of him on crutches and initial estimates are going for between 6 and 8 weeks that he's going to be out with. So that means the entire Christmas period he's going to miss. Just looking at the kind of window, it's probably between 11 and 12 games that he's not going to be able to play for. So we're going to talk about his future in just a second, but in the here and the now, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer himself, who's just gone off on holiday to get away from the newspapers and have a bit of a break, he's probably looked at his phone and gone, oh God, Pogba, now what? Oh, he's injured. I'm going to have to do something. They've got a big run of games coming up. Solskjaer's under massive pressure. He's not going to have Pogba. He missed the derby at the weekend because he was suspended, but he's still massively important. What does Solskjaer do now in terms of in his team to replace Paul Pogba?
I think this could be a blessing, to be honest. I feel like, you know, we've talked a lot about, obviously, Pogba and Man United over the years. But just to recap, the sort of point I'm making is that Pogba is a very specific system player. He only plays best in a midfield three. Man United haven't been playing a midfield three this season. They've been playing two holding midfielders and one and Bruno ahead of them. He doesn't fit into that system at all. So if you're going to find a solution to Man United's bad form at the minute, he doesn't fit into this back five system, which doesn't work for Man United at all. He doesn't fit into that. He fits into the same system as they played last season. And Solskjaer's shown no sign of going back to that. So it could be sometimes like when you don't have players, you don't worry about them. You pick the system around them because they're not available and you stumble across something that might just be there, might just work for you. And sometimes you can stumble across something and you can have a good season off the back of it. I feel like if they'd had a couple more injuries this season, they might have stumbled across it already, but they haven't. They've had a lot of players like Sancho available, so he got a few games at the start of the season. Then they had to find out that he wasn't up to speed and not playing that well. And you almost have to go through the bad times to realise that, oh Christ, he's not as much of a solution as we thought he was going to be. So it could be similar with Pogba, but again, it opens up the thing about his future. You know, he's available on a free at the end of the season. Does he get a new contract? I don't know. Probably not. You probably want to flog him in January and try and get rid of him for something, just to offset that money you've spent on him, bringing him back to Manchester United from Juventus. And ironically, he's probably going to go to Juventus again if reports are to be believed. So it could be, we could have that case of Pogba's career going from leaving Man United on a free to go to Juventus, United signing him back for 90 million and then selling him on a free to Juventus again, like not learning from the mistakes. And that just sums up how poor Man United have been off the pitch over the past 10 years or so, or possibly longer. So it's a bit of a situation for Man United, but it's probably not the most pressing one, because the most pressing one right now is on the pitch and picking up wins ahead of this tough period they've got coming up.
Looking at the situation with Pogba, Matt, obviously now the fact that he's going to miss probably the rest of 2021 because of this injury, naturally people are going to start looking at his future. As Marley said, he's out of contract at the end of the season. No progress on an extension as it stands. And from the 1st of January, he is allowed to agree a free contract move to a non-Premier League team. He can start talks immediately then. No rules will be broken. And you would get the sense that behind the scenes, his agent, we know, is someone that is not afraid to kind of get involved in a bit of the dark arts and get deals done, particularly if there's a few quid in it for him. So given the fact that he's probably not going to play again between now and the end of 2021, he could have negotiated a move away, whether that's a pre-contract to leave on a free at the end of the season, or as Marley said, United push hard to get a fee for him in January and then sell him. Are we looking at a situation where Paul Pogba has played his last game for Manchester United?
Ironically there, what you were saying about his agent, I remember it was the day before we played them at home, and it was basically if we beat United, we won the league. And I remember there was a story coming out the day before that Raiola had spoken to Man City or some representative of Man City at some point, offered Paul Pogba to Man City, and obviously City rejected it. And the day after we played them, and that is for 45 minutes, that's the best I've ever seen Paul Pogba play in a Man United shirt. They ended up, it was 2-0 up at half time, they ended up beating us 3-2, and Pogba turned that second half around on his own. That is the best I've ever seen Paul Pogba play in a Man United shirt, and a lot of Man United fans that I've spoke to agree with me on that. It's been, obviously he's come in that first season there with Mourinho, and he's won a couple of trophies, but obviously won nothing since. It's just been a bit of a nightmare for him. We've seen that he's been played out of position. Yeah, he's better in a midfield three, in a diamond sitting on the left. But a player of Pogba's quality should be coming in, and he should be doing it on a more consistent basis. Like I said, they signed him for 90 million, you know, and there was the old Pogback hashtag thing going on and stuff like that, and all this hype surrounding him. He was dancing in Adidas videos. And it's just not worked out for him. I don't know what's happened. I don't know whether it's an attitude thing with him or what, because we've seen that he can produce some moments of real brilliance and on big stages like with France and stuff like that. So I don't know what it is with Pogba. I don't know whether the club's just not been the right fit for him. There must have been a reason why Fergie wanted to get rid of him. A few United fans have said to me, why did Fergie get rid of him if he was that highly rated? There must have been something going on behind the scenes that we didn't know about. I don't think you'll see him play for Man United again now. I think that'll be it now with him. I think United fans have lost patience with him. They've seen him and they've already made their minds up about him. And it's obviously been a shame. It's been a shame for the Premier League, because we've seen him produce some moments of brilliance for Juventus. I remember when they were signing him and I was thinking, oh, here we go. You know what I mean? It was the season where we'd got Guardiola in. And I was thinking, right, well, they've just took the shine away from that for us. He's going to come in and he's probably going to be the best midfielder in the Premier League for a few years now, because he was obviously still has age on his side at that point. But now I think he just needs to go and rebuild his career somewhere else. Like I said, Juventus is probably going to be the place where he wants to go. Non-Premier League club. He's loved by the fans there. He knows the style of football. It probably suits him more, the slower game over there in Italy. They're not going to get what they paid for him, you know what I mean? They're not going to get that. They're going to take a loss. They're going to take about a 30 mil loss. I think you'll see about 60 million be the limit with Pogba, if anyone's willing to pay that. Or they'll do it over a couple of years, like they've done with certain players in the past. So yeah, no, I don't think we'll see Pogba again in the United shirt. He's got this injury now. The club are just going to want to probably just take the losses now and offload him as soon as possible.
Marley, I'm going to go to you kind of on the final word with this, with Pogba. Matt thinks that this is it, this is him done. Obviously, in terms of the injury, he's very unlikely to play again this year. There's a few options still on the table. He could come back in January, play, see out his contract and leave in the summer for free. He could agree this pre-contract with a non-Premier League club in January, or United, as you mentioned, could sell him. So there are options on the table for both Pogba and United in terms of what they do in January. How do you see this playing out in the next couple of months?
If there's a buyer, sell. If there's somebody willing to buy him sooner rather than later, I would do it. However, once you get to January, you know, Mino Raiola's no mug. He knows that there's more money in the summer on a free. He knows he can earn more, and Paul Pogba can earn more if they hang on an extra 6 months. They can easily talk to Juventus and say he's coming in the summer. We want a £50 million signing on bonus or something like that. And it'll go that way, because Raiola is a ruthless negotiator, and he'll get the best for his client, and by best I mean the most money. So I can see it playing out. He leaves in the summer, but if somebody wants to steal a march on, like Juventus, for example, I could also see someone paying for him to jump ahead of them in the queue. I could see someone like PSG coming in for him if they fancy him. I feel like PSG is a good fit for him. I think they've got too many midfielders right now, but I feel like they would have no issues in bringing one of France's best players to Paris, to the French capital, and have him as a mainstay in that team. So we'll have to wait and see, but I can see it playing out as his future is not going to be at Man United. I think we've had too much too much time now. I think if we were ever going to find that question of can Paul Pogba produce his best form consistently for Man United, if we're still asking that question 5 years after he came to Man United for the second time at the age of 24 or whatever he was, you know, you're never going to find it out in the next 5 years. You'll have found it out in the past 5 years, and the answer to can Pogba produce his best in England has been a resounding no, I would think.
Yeah, Pog back, Pog go, Pog stay, whichever way it works out. It's going to be a big January for Manchester United and for Paul Pogba. Guys, we're going to call it there for Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Marley, Matt, as always, thanks so much.
Cheers, lads.
Nice one, fellas.
Great stuff, guys. And as always, here on the Football Social Daily, we are here every single day with a daily Premier League podcast. If you click subscribe, you can get the brand new episode as soon as it is ready. We'll be back tomorrow previewing what is a massive round of 2022 World Cup qualifiers. Don't forget to check out the podcast then, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.